Thank you, and a very warm welcome also from my side. As you heard, I'm here together with Thomas Obendrauf and Robert van de Kerkhof. If we could go to the next page. Thank you. How were the first nine months of 2022? Yeah, Lenzing was increasingly affected by the extreme developments in the global energy and raw material markets, in line with the impact for most of the manufacturing industry. The market environment deteriorated sharply, especially during the course of the third quarter, and was worsening as the consumer climate placed additional pressure on Lenzing's business performance. Very clearly in the third quarter, you could see that consumers really see and feel the pressure from inflation. That brings us to the results. On the left-hand side, the upper box, you see our revenue grew by 24% to close to 2 billion euro, mainly driven by higher fiber prices, but also by an increase in pulp prices and volume. At the same token, it's true to see that our EBITDA suffered from higher energy costs and raw material costs, and we landed at 263, which is 11.6% less versus the same period last year. The net results after minorities and hybrid bonds decreased by 43% to 57 million, and the earnings per share amounted to 2.16 euro compared to 3.77 euro in the first three quarters 2021. Let's talk about the key developments. The Lenzing Supervisory Board has appointed Nico Reiner, and we made a press release about this appointment already yesterday as the new CFO as of January 1st, 2023. He succeeds Thomas Obendrauf in his position, who informed the Supervisory Board in March that he would not be available for a further extension of his contract, which expired in June 2022. Having said that, as you know, I'm currently having the role as a CFO at interim, but as you can see also in this call, Thomas is greatly supporting me, and with that, we are in the financial department in good hands. Despite our pressure on the financial results, it is very important to mention that we take action and control what we can control. The first thing we do, and we have started, is a program on the reorganization and cost reduction, aiming at annualized 70 million euro impact. We also, and are extremely proud of our two major projects in Thailand and Brazil. The two projects represent the largest capital investment program of Lenzing in its history, and both projects, despite various challenges like Corona, were delivered in time, in budget, with excellent safety performance. We can say not only the physical commissioning, but also the commercial commissioning is going well. We continue our journey. We started to drive our energy path and our energy platform to create higher autarky and reduce the CO2 footprint well before the energy crisis hit Europe so badly. Therefore, we are very pleased to report a lot of progress there. What is our outlook for 2022? The worsened market environment is increasingly weighing on the consumer sentiment, and as a consequence, on the relevant industries for Lenzing. That has for sure an impact also on the demand. The business prospects therefore further aggravated in the third quarter. The demand visibility remains extremely low, so even lower than in COVID times, and the cost volatility as well as cost levels high. Nevertheless, Lenzing expects that the results in 2022 will be in line with the current market expectation. When we look further out to the year 2027, we as a management board are still confirming our targets, which is an EBITDA above 1 billion euro, a ROCE greater than 12%, and a net financial debt over EBITDA, which is below 2.5x. As mentioned before in the summary, we have a new CFO, and here you have a picture of Nico Reiner, who is starting on the first of January, and he will complete then the management board. He previously served for more than 15 years as a CFO in various companies, to mention Flyrol Group, Alcocobre, and Gico International. He has a broad experience, worked as a consultant, as well as delivering major investment projects and in the wood materials industry. We are very glad that we could get such a caliber on board, and he will be crucial on our journey to fulfill the targets I just mentioned for 2027. Until then, I will continue to perform the duties of a Chief Financial Officer on an interim basis, while Thomas continues to greatly support me in his as an advisor and in his role as Senior Vice President, Finance. Good. Now, the Lenzing program about reorganization and cost reduction. It is clear that we experience at the moment high distortions in the energy and raw material markets, and those are now impacting consumers much more in the third quarter, starting in the third quarter, and you will see that later on also with some indices Robert is presenting. That is limiting our short and medium-term business trends, and therefore, we are now forced to accelerate a program which was anyway part of our strategy and our purpose rollout to enhance the accountability, agility, but also the effectiveness and efficiency in our organization. We launched this program already a couple of weeks ago, and we will see already impact in 2022. When fully implemented, it will have an impact of 70 million euros in cost reduction on an annualized basis. Which brings me to one of our success stories. You heard it before, it was also seen as one of our risks. Do we really get such a huge investment in time, in budget? We delivered. We are now adding another 500,000 tons of dissolved wood pulp into our capacity, and with that, we have an overall capacity of approximately 1.1 million tons. That is, of course, a great asset to have in terms of backward integration, as you can read on the slide, as this is a site which operates as a cost leader that will help our profitability, but also serves our needs to strengthen our specialty fiber growth. The project was, as mentioned before, finished in budget and in time. Next to the successful startup, and we will reach the full run rate, most likely end of the year 2022, sorry. The commercial ramp-up is also well on track, and we were able to generate first turnover also in the external market. For those who don't know, when we talk about our plant in Brazil, LDC, it is a joint venture, where Lenzing holds 51% and Dexco 49%. It is fully consolidated with Lenzing. That brings me to Thailand, and there's nobody more confident than Thomas to talk about that plant as he was running that next to his CFO duties. Thomas, please.
Thank you, Stephan. Hello and welcome, also from my side. Let me briefly guide you through the latest facts with regards to our project in Thailand. Actually, as you know, and as we have communicated, the project was delivered on time and at budget, and that actually in circumstances that could not have been more challenging, actually, with COVID-19 several ways hitting us. The new plant, of course, will help us to serve the growing demand for sustainably produced fibers, and the plant itself will be operated CO2 neutral and is therefore a really extremely important milestone towards a carbon-free future. In the meantime, we have already reached the designed output. However, just to put this into perspective, actually for half a day we have reached the designed output so far. Of course, the target is to run it at that output level for 7 days a week, and that's for 50 weeks a year. And also the commercial ramp up is successful and according to plan. And with that, I hand back to you, Stefan.
Thank you so much, Thomas. Really great accomplishment from the entire team, which makes us extremely proud. Now, what do you need? You need the right capacity on fibers. You need a good backward integration in pulp. But then you also need, as we learned the hard way as well, a good energy supply. And we are working on that since years. And we are happy that we can announce some progress in these areas. So to give you a couple of the examples of the projects we are running, we have converted, for example, in Porvacarta as part of our project there, SBV Future, recently to green electricity. And we will convert part of the energy mix into bioenergy in 2023. Also in Nanjing, we are moving to green electricity. We started the gradual transition already in the third quarter of this year, and we will have completed it in 2023. As Thomas just mentioned, in Prachinburi in Thailand, all our energy, we are not only operating carbon neutral, all our production energy is based on bioenergy. When we think about Heiligenkreuz, a lot has been mentioned in the past, also in the media, there we are having several projects trying to optimize our energy mix, and I see good progress, and I'm confident that in the next couple of weeks we can make clearer announcements. What we want to do there is to have an optimal mix out of photovoltaic, biomass, and even thinking about geothermal energy. When we look at the plant in Brazil, then it is worthwhile to mention that not only are we producing pulp there, we are also feeding up to 50% of green electricity into the public grid. So that is just one extract, and then you may have seen the announcement in Austria where we just opened the ground-mounted largest of its kind photovoltaic plant here close to the Lenzing site. When we come now to sustainability and market, and I would ask Robert to give us an update there, what's going on the sustainability front as well as on the market front.
Thank you, Stefan, and also a very warm welcome from my side. Sustainability and market, a mixed picture. So let me start with the good news, sustainability. EcoVadis again rated Lenzing among the world's top 1% of the evaluated companies. So 90,000 companies, over 9,000 companies are being analyzed, and Lenzing continues to score in the top 1% with the platinum rating. I think we can be very proud of that. Sustainability in our industry is extremely important. And when I talk about sustainability, it's much more than just only the environmental topic, because as you all know, the EcoVadis ranking is looking at the environment, but it's also looking at aspects like fair working conditions, human rights, ethics, as well as sustainable procurement. I think those are the aspects that we can all be very, very proud of. A few of our customers that are now buying from Thailand are saying, oh, is Lenzing really able to manage a site in Brazil or in Thailand, different working conditions? As you heard, we both started off these sites very successful, and despite these are new markets for us with different working conditions, super super performance from our local management teams, and again, this platinum rating. So very proud of that. If I then look at on the product side, also here we continue to highlight with sustainability innovations in the industry that are being highly recognized. And I would like to highlight one aspect here, and that's the tensile modal fiber with the indigo color technology. So what we're doing here is we are adding actually a dye while we're spinning the fiber, really optimized for the denim sector, so indigo. And with this very innovative one-step spun dyeing process, we really deliver superior color fastness relative to the conventional indigo dyeing. That means that we can save water downstream in the value chain on the spinning and dyeing levels, specifically the dyeing level. Water, electricity, and chemical uses will be significantly less, but also the garment will be longer, let's say, wearable, as then the color fastness is something that is going to last much longer. So it helps really to the durability of the garment. And for this innovation, we won the ITMF award. ITMF is world's largest federation in the area of textiles, representing all the international textile manufacturers corporations worldwide. So that really is on the good news, both on sustainability and on the product innovation. Now, when we talk about the market is very difficult. So the ITMF, which is global network across the textile value chain, has been performing a survey every 2 months. And these are companies that are in machine making areas. These are companies that are in the garmenting areas. These are companies like fiber producers, like Lenzing. So really, across the total value chain of textiles. What they analyze is a little bit the mood in the industry. And you can see that as of the summer 2021, the mood was positive. The people really believed that the balance on the left, the balance of good versus poor, was really turning much more to the good. And specifically when you then look at the end of last year, the mood in the industry was really very positive. So people were optimistic. Even in Q1, it started still very good. Q2, very good start. But then look at July. Suddenly it went from still a solid plus 13 to minus 2. The market really tipped where the mood changed from good to poor. And this is data, of course, that is reflected, unfortunately, it's reported several weeks later, so it's reflecting a little bit old data. But you can see also here in September, the outlook is even less optimistic. What are the key concerns throughout the value chain? Number one is really the weakening demand across the value chain. That is really consumer driven, but it's also linked then to the high raw material costs that are very important throughout the whole value chain. High energy prices, which affect us as a fiber producer, but you can imagine throughout the value chain, everybody needs energy. And then of course, the inflation that really drives the ultimate consumer demand. So that is really what we are feeling very, very strong. What result does it have now on the market, on the brands and retailers? And what we are watching is their inventory levels, what is happening with their product flow. And here you can see the US data. So if you now look back in 2013, so this is now August data, from all the way from 2013 till 2022, the variation has been fairly narrow. There's not been so many changes from year over year. In two COVID years, inventory levels at retail and at wholesale were lower. People were much more cautious what they were buying. They were in a very narrow range, but suddenly, as you can see, in a very short time period, significantly increasing. Wholesale even increased 70%, retail 28%, the overall retail or the overall garment inventory in the United States went up 44%. Now that has resulted in, of course, an ordering reduction from the brands and retailers, even cancellations of orders. And as a consequence, the inventory throughout the value chain, be it at fabric level, be it at garment level, be it even at spinner level, so the yarn that is being spun, has been rapidly increasing. And that is now, that huge correction is what we are feeling with the drop in demand. Now, less demand means lower prices. As you can see, that we've been reporting already repeatedly that the cotton was increasing. There was a lot of speculation in the cotton prices. The high level of confidence at retail level saying, hey, the consumers are back, the consumers are buying, also with overall retail turnover being exceeding pre-pandemic levels, really boosted the cotton demand because that was a product that the brands and retailers could sell. That speculation really tipped this summer. As you can see here, there's not been a small correction, but there's really been a very rapid decline in the cotton prices, and cotton will continue to be very, very volatile simply because of the very weak demand. If you then look at the other part of the slide, really the bottom dark line, where you have then the polyester. Polyester prices definitely increased versus 2020, also driven by higher costs of intermediates. The price of polyester also started to come down in 2022, driven by lower demand. Now, when I'm talking about lower demand, of course I'm talking to the European producers, the European consumers, because they are buying less because of the huge inflation in Europe driven by energy. But even also in China, where a lot of polyester garments are being consumed, the demand is dropping because there's many areas still confronted with lockdowns. So overall consumer sentiment in China is also weak, and that is reflecting a lot in this polyester price trend with weak demand. If you then look at the dissolving wood pulp prices, they have increased definitely throughout 2022. You can see that since July they have been dropping, driven by a lower demand in the wood-based cellulosic fiber industry. And if you then look at finally then the chart, which is the solid line in the middle, that is the CCF, so the Chinese producer prices for viscose. That viscose price has been coming down, while normally September, October are high season months in China. That is normally when the prices are increasing. And despite that seasonal normal period, prices actually declined. Demand is extremely weak across the board. So this is resulting now in also a very high theoretical loss. So if you follow CCF, the high costs are being felt even by the Chinese producers, and prices at this level are not sustainable. We're talking about approximately 2,000 RMB theoretical loss for a fiber produced according to the CCF statistics. So the viscose market, despite the price level where we are today, is really not very healthy. Now, if you look then at lensing specialty prices, we are monitoring this because we have a much stable pricing. We are fixing with our downstream customers prices by quarter, and that's why in this slide, which we have been showing you already since several years, we are looking at the price trend with the 6 month moving average. Now, when I say 6 month moving average, that is of course then applied to all these three fiber indexes. We don't want to be always the fastest with increases or the fastest with decreases. We want to really show also brands and retailers that we have stable and rising pricing policy. And you've seen that we had to make a major correction in 2020 due to COVID. And since 2021, we have been able to increase the lensing specialty prices. Cotton rapidly coming down, the viscose coming up. When you just start seeing right now when with lensing, the last part of the line is that it's difficult still to see, but I can already tell you prices are flattening out a bit. Of course, in the current market circumstances, it's very difficult to increase the prices even further, but we have been able to drive the prices up, as has already been mentioned, still quite successfully throughout 2022. So, but it remained a very, very difficult market environment. Now, long term, because Stefan also shared our bullishness still on the 27 outlook, why are we still believing in our 2027 outlook? Fundamentally, the market is still our market. The population continues to grow, approximately 1% helps overall fiber demand. GDP growth of 3% results in a 2 to 3% growth in fiber market. So those are the fundamentals that are still fully in place. Now, the drive for sustainability, and I'm engaged with quite a few initiatives with the European Union on the EU textile strategy. There are definitely some questions being asked. Should we continue to go high speed for the Green Deal, for all this greening up of the textile industry? And they are fully committed. The drive to sustainable fibers will continue, and that is really helping the growth of the wood-based cellulosic fibers. I'm convinced that we will be able to go back to a 4-6% growth rate after the current crisis. But then the bigger highlight, of course, is lyocell being recognized as one of the most sustainable fibers in the whole industry, with great performance from an aesthetics perspective, from a tenacity perspective, but also specifically with the environmental footprint of lyocell. There we are seeing a significant increase in demand, with more and more standard applications adapting the lyocell fibers, be it in home textile, be it in denim, be it in shirting. So there we do see growth rates that are above the 20%. And Lenzing, of course, is really well positioned to capture this growth. Now, if you look then at the overall fiber industry, and here I'm talking about every fiber being produced in textiles, non-woven, and other industrial applications, it's a market that is now around 110 million tons. And this market has, in several occasions, been confronted with major challenges. Here you can see an analysis that has been done by our strategy department. I think it's really an interesting analysis. You see the oil crisis, where back in 1975, where you could see really a drop. If I then look at 2010, the global financial crisis, also 3 years of significant drop. But what you really can see is very clearly is the fiber market always managed to recover after these crises. The recovery came fairly fast, and recovery came really very robust, so it continued to grow. So right now, we are definitely in another crisis, 2 years of the COVID pandemic. Right now, of course, the crisis of high-cost inflation. But as you can see, based on numerous examples, I'm very confident that even here, the fiber industry will recover and will grow very fast. And with that, I would like to hand over then to Thomas to elucidate in more details on the financials.
Thank you, Robert. As usual, let me guide you through the most important financials for the last quarter and the first 9 months, 2022. Let me start with revenues. Revenues came in with 677 million for Q3. That is basically on the same level as in Q2. Compared to Q3 last year, we saw an increase by 22%. And year to date, we are now close to 2 billion compared to close to 1.6 billion the year before. The increase is mostly driven by higher fiber prices, whilst the fiber sales volume is down by more than 10% in Q3 and roughly 5% down for the first 9 months. What also contributed to higher revenues was, of course, the startup of our new pipe site in Brazil, plus higher revenues for our biorefinery products. With regards to fiber revenue by application, as you can see from the slide, we were mostly hovering around the usual 70-30 split. However, as is obvious in the chart, in Q3 we saw a weakening demand for textile fibers, whilst non-woven fibers basically remained on the same level as in the quarters before. And with regard to the specialties share of our fiber sales, we are now at 73%, which is basically on the same level as in the year before. Moving on to costs. Actually, in addition to the lower demand, the earnings trend reflects the sharp rise in energy and raw material costs. And the biggest increase in chemicals is coming from caustic soda. Here I think it is important to mention that we are hit hard, especially in Europe. Whilst in Asia, caustic prices are and were on what I would call actually a high level throughout 2022, actually the price level now in Europe has become completely irrational. And luckily we do have a backup solution with imports from Asia. Energy is, of course, up significantly as well, especially power and gas. Coal in Europe up as well, but of course not by the extent we saw for gas and power. Moving on to EBITDA. As a consequence, we see a drop in EBITDA sequentially, but also compared to last year. Q3 came in with 74 million. compared to 80 million the year before. Year to date, actually, we are down as well. We are now at 263 million compared to 298 the year before. EBITDA margin now stands at 11% for the quarter and 13% year to date. And of course, with regards to EBIT, we see, of course, the same development there. EBIT margin came in now at 3% for the quarter and 6% year to date. Moving on to group net profit and earnings per share. Group net profit after minorities and hybrid bonds came in at a negative 5 million for the quarter. Year to date, we are now at 57 million versus 100 million the year before. There are two things I would like to highlight in that regard. You might be surprised by our financial result, especially in light of our net financial debt. Actually, the financial result is positive for two reasons. First of all, we are capitalizing the interest costs during construction and commissioning phase. However, please keep in mind that it's coming to an end now in Brazil as well. And secondly, we do have some financial assets, especially some intercompany loans that are denominated in US dollar. So with the strengthening of the US dollar, we of course see resulting foreign exchange gains in our financial result. And the other topic I would like to highlight is regarding our corporate income taxes. As you all know, we are operating plants in several emerging countries, and in most of those countries, we are using the US dollar as our functional currency. So we do so, for example, in Indonesia, in Thailand, and in Brazil as well. So when the local currency, and of course the local currency is being used for tax purposes, so whenever the local currency is moving versus the US dollar, we will see for sure an impact on the tax line due to exchange rate differences resulting from the translation of deferred tax items from local to functional currencies. And what we saw in Q3 is that the Brazilian real actually weakened quite a bit versus the US dollar, having then, of course, a negative impact on our corporate income tax line. Moving on to cash flow, operating cash flow again hovering around the 80 million euro level. Gross cash flow, is hovering around the 80 million euro level. Operating cash flow now slightly positive. Free cash flow, of course, negative, with CapEx now coming in with 143 million for the quarter. And with regards to the trading working capital, actually by the end of Q3, we were at slightly more than 600 million euro. And in terms of annualized revenues, we are at 23%. That is, of course, the consequence of our high inventory level. Inventories should have peaked by now, and our expectation is that trading working capital in percent of revenues will come down to the 20% mark over the next couple of quarters. Now, a brief look also to our balance sheet. Net financial debt now stands at 1.7 billion, whilst the economic net financial debt, which is adjusted for the portion that is being guaranteed by our joint venture partner in Brazil, stands at 1.15 billion euro. The increase is, of course, a result of the negative free cash flow. Adjusted equity now at 2.26 billion and adjusted equity ratio at close to 38%. And with regards to our liquidity cushion, we still have roughly 1 billion left. Keep in mind that our projects in Thailand and in Brazil are basically finished now and are in the ramp-up phase. And both projects are basically expected to reach full run rate over the next couple of months. And then, of course, the expectation is that these two projects, of course, also come in with a significant contribution to earnings. Last but not least, let us have a look at our maturity profile. There are three things I would like to mention in that regard. First of all, as you can see here from the slide, the debt maturities are well spread out over the next couple of years. Second thing already mentioned before, we do have a liquidity cushion of approximately €1 billion. And third thing is also mentioned already, the big projects in Brazil and in Thailand are finished by now. And the other two projects, the conversion project in China and Indonesia, actually they will be finished over the next couple of months. And with that, actually, I am at the end of my elucidations and would hand back to Stefan for the outlook.
Thank you, Thomas. I guess the key message is on top of the slide, for which is interesting for you. Lenzing expects its result 2022 to be in line with the current market expectations. I guess the war in Ukraine, the China's COVID zero policy, and also the sharp rise in inflation had a significant impact on the global economy. And this worsened market environment is also increasingly affecting us as consumers and the consumer climate in general, as well as the sentiment of the industry, which is relevant for Lenzing. And as a consequence, our business prospects worsened significantly in the third quarter. Now, that resulted to our guidance we give on the outlook. However, Lenzing takes action and controls where possible to increase our business prospects. As already mentioned before, we implement a structural reform and cost reduction program, which will already lead to initial cost savings in the short term, i.e. in this year, and will strengthen the Lenzing competitiveness in the mid and long term even further. It will enhance what we want to drive with our new culture in terms of accountability for performance, agility, but effectiveness and efficiency as well. When fully implemented, it will deliver around about 70 million on an annualized level. We will continue to increase our already high energy autarky even further and thereby reduce our energy dependency as well as driving our CO2 reduction program forward. Lenzing has the right product that tackles some of the most relevant megatrends. The trend of sustainability and the trend of circularity is not going away. There might be a little pause in these days, but these trends stay, and then Lenzing, with its product portfolio, is best positioned. Our commercial teams are highly motivated, with, as you could hear from Robert, and they boost currently their activities in order to open new doors for our fibers and address new customers and segments. That is possible also because we are having done the investment in Thailand and we have more capacity available than in the past. And we will continue, despite all the saving efforts we do, we will continue the transformation of our two sites in Indonesia and China in order to improve our product portfolio towards a much more environmental friendly premium fiber mix than we have today. As you can see on the right-hand side, we are setting ourselves pretty ambitious target for 2027. We will deliver an EBITDA which is bigger than €1 billion, with a ROCE which is greater than 12% and a financial leverage which is below 2.5 times. With other words, we as a board, we are very positive for the future. Lenzing has taken the right strategic steps, has implemented them extremely well. So we are ready to grow. And with that, I would like to finish and open up for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Please note that questions are only possible via telephone. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may press star followed by two. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. One moment for the first question, please. And the first question is from the line of Christian Faitz from Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for this call. Two questions, please, from my side. Can you please talk about the one-time costs for your 70 million cost program? And then second, we just heard, obviously, you can sell some energy out of the Brazilian plant on the output side, but can you talk about the energy mix for your Brazilian plant on the input side? That would be helpful to know. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. Maybe to your first question, as we elucidated, we are developing this program, and rightfully, as you expect, there will be one-time costs. That depends very much on in which country, which people exactly gonna leave the company, and therefore I can at this stage not give a final estimate yet. And as soon as the program is further established, we can update.
Okay, thank you.
And in terms of energy mix, this is a pulp mill, so we are producing out of our biorefinery concept the energy in form of a black liquor, which then produces the energy and therefore is green energy into the grid, as well as energy for our own production.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question is from the line of Isha Sharma from Stifel Europe. Please go ahead. Isha Sharma from Stifel, you are now live. Please unmute your telephone.
At least we cannot hear the question.
No, unfortunately, we can't hear Ms. Sharma. And in the meantime, we would go ahead with Markus Meyer from Bada. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, good afternoon, gentlemen. Three questions from my side. I think I will ask them one by one. You not anymore mention your 2024 targets. Previously, you said they are at risk. Should we now read this that they are completely off for you? That's my first question.
I would leave it with a statement. We said a lot depends on when and how fast the business will come back. And with that, I would say it's the statement we did along the line, our ad hoc is still valid.
Okay. Second question is on the inventory level. You said that the inventory levels at your the whole value chain basically is extremely high. How do you think will this destocking take, and also do you expect inventory devaluation risks for you?
We reported about two levels of inventory. One was the inventory level at Lansing, and Robert talked about the inventory level in the value chain of textile. Your question is related which part?
Basically, the destocking part is independent if it's in the industry or on your side. I think it goes hand in hand. Yeah? But the inventory devaluation risk, of course, related to your balance sheet.
Okay. Yeah. Let me before then, I'll let Thomas answer a little bit about the inventory devaluation. I think if I now look at the overall value chain inventory, it's very difficult to predict how long this will take. We've seen that brands and retailers significantly saw their inventories increasing. Their order books have been reduced, which resulted in some cancelled orders. There are also certain commitments from brands and retailers that fabrics that are currently in the inventory will be used in other collections than even in 2023. And therefore, it's very difficult to actually predict how fast the destocking will happen. And unfortunately, when you look at some of the retailer reports right now, the warm October also is again resulting in fairly low retail sales. And those numbers are not even available yet, but those are the comments that we hear in the industry. So how long it will take for the inventory throughout the value chain to be cleaned up? It will take some time, but very difficult to predict how long. When you look at then our inventory, we have reacted, of course, very fast. We've seen our inventory increasing, specifically then during the summer months when the order books were still healthy, but then afterwards we did not see new orders coming in. So we are at this moment adjusting our production plan quite rapidly, and we have a plan to reduce our fiber inventory quite significant until the end of the year. We'll still be a little bit above what would be a target level, but it will be significantly below where we are today. And from a valuation, Thomas?
I mean, you mentioned already almost everything. So we will be, according to our plans, we will be very close to our target level already by the end of 2022. We have adjusted our output accordingly. So actually, we have the peak in finished goods stock already behind us, and inventory is coming down week by week. With regards to a potential NRV risk, so that of course then besides the volume component, actually that will also of course depend on price development, especially for standard viscose. However, actually we are doing this valuation on a monthly basis, so whatever had to be reflected in Q3 is already reflected.
Okay, so basically then the risk is only then on Q4. If there's a further drop, and then you have to take a certain devaluation risk at the end of the year. Is this correct?
Yes, I mean, actually, on the one side, on the sales prices, of course. So actually, of course, we are closely watching the development, especially of viscose prices. And of course, what also has an impact is, of course, the development of production costs and input material as well, of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then my last question would be if you could give an indication on the revenue split of pulp versus fibers in the third quarter or 9 months.
On the revenue split, actually, just give me 1 second for Q3. We had in the fiber division slightly more than 500 million, and in the pipe division, actually, however, that is before consolidation, of course, we had 300 million as we normally disclose it in our segment report.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
The next question is from the line of Bartek Pastwa from Schroders. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Firstly, maybe the sort of technical, easy ones. What do you expect your CapEx spending to be next year? And also, what is the new maintenance level now that you have your new facilities there, please? I've got one more, please.
So when you refer to the CapEx spend in next year, I guess it's a fair assumption that it will be mainly on the maintenance CapEx, which is in line with the depreciation, but you need to watch out that LDC and T3 are new plants, so that will be you cannot take the full depreciation, and the rest will depending on our decisions of capacity additions.
Okay, can you quantify that? What is the current? What will be the current depreciation for next year, roughly speaking? What's that number?
Look, I mean, we had a level of depreciation. If you just take a look at the last couple of years. In the range of 160 million roughly. However, now of course depreciation is increasing significantly due to the new projects in Thailand and in Brazil now going live. And that is what Stefan mentioned before. Right? Let's say the historical depreciation we saw especially in the last 2-3 years. Actually, I think it is a fair assumption to assume that that amount needs to be reinvested more or less. However, actually, as the plants in Thailand and in Brazil, as they are brand new, we will not reinvest to the same extent. There might be some minor adjustments that need to be, or fine tunings that need to be done. However, of course, we will not fully reinvest depreciation of next year.
Yeah.
And the second bucket, and of course, what we call the expansion capex, that of course depends on decisions still to be made on further capacity increases, be it now in lyocell or whatever area. So those decisions, of course, not yet made at this point in time.
Okay. Is there any way now you've got your projects, the Thailand and Brazil, almost up and running, but not fully ramped up? Would you quantify the sort of earnings for those projects at the moment as we stand? Obviously, you've got higher costs. The market has changed a bit. Anything you can quantify around that? Payback periods? Just you've always been very vague around that, and I think maybe we should get some more information now.
Actually, I think what we always disclosed in that regard is that we are aiming for a ROCE at that point in time for more than 10%, and actually we would not have kicked off those two projects in case the projects would not have met the threshold. So I think that should be indication enough on doing the numbers. Second thing is, I mean, actually, as you mentioned, of course, both projects are currently in the ramp-up phase. I think it is fair to confirm that actually Thailand has already reached a break-even on an EBITDA basis. And with regard to Brazil, we are already seeing positive EBITDA contributions in Q3. Of course, the difference being that Stefan might not like now this statement. However, technically it is a bit easier to ramp up a pipe mill than it is for a lyocell site.
I don't mind. We ramp up both positively, so yes.
Okay, good. Finally, maybe on your sort of funding maturities, etc. You said you sounded pretty confident around your funding levels, but there are, I'm just going back to that page, you've got 270 million next year, 550 or 40 million the following year. You know, liquidity is there at the moment, but I think the bigger question is, how do you see your funding structure from here onwards? You've got the hybrid M25. You know, that becomes very expensive if you don't refinance that. I'd like to have more comments, more specific sort of your view around that. You know, you're thinking of more expansion spending next year. If that expansion spending takes place, how will you be able to meet those maturities or refinance? What's the relationship there with your banks and funding partners, et cetera?
Look, I mean, first of all, I mean, we are still having a liquidity cushion of close to $1 billion, right? As shown on the slide. And secondly, actually, as I also elucidated during the presentation, we are now at the moment where those major expansion projects that did cost a lot of money, of course, are going live. So actually, we do expect significant EBITDA contributions from all those projects, be it now in Brazil, be it in Thailand, but also for those projects in Indonesia and in China as well. These two projects, whilst they are of a smaller scope, of course, nevertheless, the capex in total, there we also talk about 200 million plus. Mm. And actually we do also have expectations with profitability there. So, and all those four projects, latest in the course of next year, will be up and running and contribute to earnings accordingly. And with that, of course, profitability level should improve, and that should, of course, make the financing significantly easier. And with regards to financing potential further expansion projects, that is, of course, a topic that needs to be decided together with the decision on the project as such.
Okay. And the hybrid, what do you see? What do you, what's your view there? What do you want to?
Look, on the hybrid, I would agree to your statement. Of course, keeping this hybrid would, of course, be very expensive, and we don't have any plans in that regard. Please keep in mind, this is, of course, shown also as maturing in 2025. That is, of course, correct. However, it is only maturing by the end of 2025. So basically, there is still 3 years of time to think about what is the best option on how to deal with it.
Okay, thank you.
Next try for Isha Sharma from Stifel Europe. Please go ahead.
Hi, I hope you can hear me now. I have a number of questions. So thank you for the presentation. Could you help us with your current utilization rates and if they differ between the different fiber categories? The second one would be, does downtrading impact you? And if yes, how? How does it impact you? You mentioned your specialty prices are stable, sort of leveling. What is your expectation going forward here in the current environment? The third one would be on lyocell. You said that the demand looks attractive. Are your competitors still struggling with the quality, and how do you expect the competitive landscapes to develop in the next years?
Okay, let me start. First of all, we hear you well, and welcome to the call. So on the operating rate, we can say that we reacted and we continue to react selectively depending on the demand, and therefore your assumption is right. That depends really on the product mix. Currently, our operating rate is slightly lower than the commercial rate, where, as Thomas elucidated, we have still high stock levels, which we want to get down by year's end. Then the second question was about
the prices.
If downtrading impacts you, yeah. And how do you expect the specialty prices to develop going forward?
So at this moment, it's the demand that is the biggest challenge right now. So we've stabilized the prices because also price drop will not increase the demand. How that situation will change in the next couple of months is very, very difficult to predict. So what we are working on right now is, of course, on the textile side, we are expecting those prices will remain stable at least for the premium product, so the Modal and the Lyocell. On viscose, the visibility is extremely limited. As I mentioned there also, it's our premium, really, even for products like Ecovero, is still linked to the standard CCF price, and there is very limited rationale at this moment, so very difficult to predict what is happening there. Now, on the lyocell demand, as I said, it is something that has been, let's say, more stable than what we've seen for viscose and modal. The lyocell demand is, of course, at this moment, feeling the same pressure as the whole industry is seeing right now. Our competitors are more impacted. Their production, their operating rates are still fairly low. They have increased recently. For certain domestic demand in China, their quality is not yet up to the level, let's say, good enough for the international brands and retailers. So this is where we are currently still specified. The demand that brands and retailers are fulfilling right now is still fulfilled with the with our lyocell fibers. Domestic China is where we see the Chinese competition. How long that competitive advantage will remain is to be seen, but so far, we are also working good on our quality, so I'm confident that we can keep our competitive advantage still for some time to come.
And our customers, let me add that, are really loving our brand, Tencel. It is the fastest growing ingredient brand. So we really see that we are reaching not only customers but consumers, and therefore we are creating also a pull for our lyocell fibers via our marketing approach.
Thank you, very helpful. Now if I may slip in a few for Thomas, please. Thanks a lot for the repayment schedule in the slide deck. And also in the details of financial result, as you mentioned that it was a positive number for the first 9 months, that was surprising. But could you help us with modeling interest rates, especially at these levels, because your majority of your debt is dollar denominated and the interest rates, as we know, are rising. So assuming the current levels, what should we think of as a normal run rate for your financial result? That would be great. The second question is on other operating income in Q3. We saw a step up quarter over quarter. Could you tell us what drove this? And the third one is on depreciation. Seems like we still haven't seen the full depreciation step up. Should we expect the step up to come in Q4 and then take that as a run rate going forward? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I hope I have taken all notes regarding. So the first one was on the financial result. There are two major things, as I elucidated in my presentation. The one is actually, of course, we are capitalizing interest during construction and commissioning phase. And for Thailand, that has already ended. However, it now came to an end for Brazil as well. And I think as we always communicated, actually the debt we have for the project in Brazil is $1.1 billion, and yes, it is denominated in US dollar, actually since we stopped now capitalization, of course, the interest expense will show up in the profit and loss statement. Starting actually from Q4 onwards. That is information number one. Number two, of course, the financial result is quite a lot impacted out of foreign exchange gains that are coming from financial assets. However, assuming a constant US dollar, of course, there will be no other gains, and therefore you would basically now end up with basically the interest expense coming from our net financial debt. And net financial debt, anyway, we disclosed, of course, with $1.7 billion by the end of Q3. The gross amount of financial liabilities is, of course, bigger because we have more than $700 million in liquid assets at our banks. And of course, we earn some interest there. However, that is, of course, only a small amount. So I hope this answers question number one. Question number two was on other operating income. Actually, we also saw quite a significant FX impact out of the US dollar becoming stronger, and that, of course, for all the other assets, but the financial assets. This is then, of course, reflected accordingly in the other operating income. So there's a significant portion coming from a positive FX effects, that's it basically. And last question was on
the depreciation. Why don't we see it for?
On depreciation. I mean, you might have recognized actually when you look at our financials that throughout the year depreciation has creeped up quite a bit. I mean, last year actually we were at the level annualized of around 160 million, so 40 million a quarter. However, now in Q3 we are already at the level slightly below 60 million. However, the 60 million do not reflect yet full depreciation in Brazil. So that is yet to come. What you also have to keep in mind is the other two projects we are currently implementing in China and in Indonesia as well. Those projects will also go live over the next couple of months. So there's actually more depreciation also coming from that side. So actually for next year, I think it is fair to say, okay, when you start with the 60 million from Q3, you still need to add quite some amount for Brazil, for the expansion project in Indonesia and China. So it will be significantly above the level we see this year.
That's helpful. Thank you so much.
The next question is from the line of Vladimira Obankova from Erste Group Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello, good afternoon. Many of my questions are already answered, so a couple of them are still left. Maybe some fine-tuning or explanation. I would really appreciate if you could tell me what do you mean that 2022 results will be in line with current market expectations. Do you have any particular parameter on your mind, like EBITDA, because in the past you were always guiding EBITDA, or do you have some other parameters on your mind as well, and could you a little bit specify it more closely? Then next question would be, you said that your cost savings program should bring already some results this year. How much do you expect to realize already this year, and in which areas we will see these cost savings to be more pronounced? And last but not least, we already touched that Forex impact. Could you specify the Forex impact in the first 9 months on your revenues and on your EBIT level? And this would be it from my side at the moment.
Yeah, thank you very much. Let me take your first question. Yeah, when we talk about the guidance, and yes, indeed, we are talking about EBITDA, and since our ad hoc, a couple of analysts have updated their reports, and we only refer to those who have updated their reports since. And when you, if you want to, I can refer to our web page where you find them. The second question was on the cost savings. You can estimate that the impact will be somewhere between 10 to 20 million, mostly impacting on one hand side the production cost via procurement and continuous improvement efficiency gains, as well as some overhead costs. And FX, I think, Thomas, you will take.
And on your question on what is the impact actually out of FX in the other operating income, actually we talk about a number that is slightly above 20 million. Maybe also to come back on the question in the previous that was previously raised. I mean, in the other operating income, what we also include there is a positive impact out of our CO2 certificates. However, that is only that is an accounting topic, because those certificates being used, of course, they have to be shown in the accounts at the gross amount. So they are shown in the other operating income. However, the expense is then shown in the cost of sales. So in total, right, the gross numbers become bigger. The EBITDA impact is basically zero, or almost always zero.
Thank you, but still, on the FX, on the EBIT level, how much was it in absolute terms? I did not catch the
number.
As
I said before, slightly above 20 million.
So 20 million plus for the 9 months you said,
yes.
So, okay. And going forward, do you expect still something, or we should rather be conservatively assuming no Forex impact?
Look, going forward, actually, I think it is
No, it's a question related to your guidance, because if you have certain guidance, I would like to know if your guidance assumes that these positive effects continue, or they are excluded.
Yeah, okay. No, sorry, then I misunderstood your question. Actually, of course, our guidance is always based on the FX rates at the time. So actually, when we made this guidance, actually we were around parity roughly. So and assuming that the US dollar euro exchange rate doesn't change a lot, that is behind the assumption.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from the line of Sebastian Bray from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. I would have two, please. In absolute terms, for the year 2022, what are you thinking of for the interest and the tax charge? For the first 9 months, I think we've had financial charges of 14 million or so and tax at about 51, 52 million euro. What would you be expecting for 2022? Can I ask you if you've got any comments as well on the divisional EBITDA split? I haven't seen this. I don't believe it's provided, but I just wanted to check. Is all of the company's EBITDA in Q3 coming from pulp as opposed to fibers? And sorry, I said two. I actually meant three. Last question on investment policy. The 2027 guidance has been left intact. I assume that Lenzing has discussions at the moment with its banks about CapEx and dividend policy, but is it right to infer from the guidance being left untouched that the company is going to keep investing as it had planned prior to its warning of a few weeks ago for the next few years? And does it have its banks' confirmation that they are comfortable with that? Thank you.
So let me start with your first question. So on the segment reporting, actually, this is something we provide for the half-year numbers and the full-year numbers. However, as you implied in your question, basically the EBITDA in Q3 is basically coming from the pulp division only. So that is a fair assumption. With regards to your question on income taxes, as I elucidated during my presentation, we have quite a significant impact out of the setup, meaning that especially in Brazil, where we have a huge asset base, we are using the US dollar as the functional currency. And whenever then the local currency, which is always the base for taxation, whenever there is a huge change of the local currency to the US dollar, of course you see an impact on income taxes. In the long run, and excluding actually any FX impacts, actually we should see a tax rate that is slightly below 25%.
That's helpful, thank you. And the questions around the whether Lenzing has been in discussion with its banks with regards to can it pay a dividend for the next few years, and if the keeping of guidance for 2027 means that it has the understanding of its creditors that it can invest as it previously had planned to?
Yeah, we, as you rightfully say, we have a new dividend policy which we stick to for the years to come. And as Thomas elucidated early on, yes, the financing is one element, but we are also expecting a strong enhancement of our operating results from the new plants we just commissioned. And we will commission in the next couple of months, as well as we have a high liquidity cushion. So therefore, I'm pretty confident on that one.
Thomas, just to clarify, your creditors are happy with the company paying a dividend next year and then returning to 4.5, which is a yield of about 10% at the moment. Is it right?
Well, sorry, the two things, right? When you talk about dividend paying next year, you refer to the dividend for the year 22 or for the year 23. And let's I think process-wise, we still have a couple of months to go. Then we will pull up the net. And then we will discuss together with the supervisory board what we do in terms of dividend for this year. And we have our dividend policy for the years to come in place as we announced.
But I understand this to the policy, but have your bank said yes to it?
Look, I mean, the dividend policy is nothing that needs approval from the banks, right? That is something that is up to the board to decide on the dividend. However, the question, I think your question is much more around, okay, fine, is it smart to pay out dividends or so? However, as Stefan elucidated before, I mean, first of all, we need to distinguish between the years that you are probably looking at. One is that the 2022, and for that no decision has been made yet. And no discussion has taken place so far. And for 2023 onwards, there is a dividend policy in place. With the current net financial debt, of course, this is something that needs to be discussed on board level, and then of course decided on that level, and then discussed as well with the supervisory board. However, that is nothing that is up for discussion now.
But that's understood, but it comes back to a discussion of what the covenants are that Lansing has. At the current level of net debt, or I believe above 4x net debt to EBITDA, are the banks legally in a position to influence the company's dividend policy?
There are negative covenants in place that are market standard. And the one question is, of course, okay, fine, what is mentioned in the contracts? And the other question is, what is the board going to do? I mean, as we always, I think, communicated, the long-term target of Lansing is to be at the level of below 2.5x net financial debt over EBITDA, right? And that is something that is still in place, and those decisions will be made those bridges will be crossed once we are there.
That's understood. Thank you for taking my questions.
The next question is from the line of Ashraful Mumin from Man GLG. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Question on the ramp-up of Brazil and Thailand. You mentioned they should be ramped up fully in the next few months. Could you just comment in regards to EBITDA ramp-ups? Does the EBITDA ramp-up follow the production ramp-up? So in the next few months, will we be at like peak EBITDA on a monthly basis? If you could just comment on that, and could you give us what's the ramp up for EBITDA, you know, over the next few years on those plants?
For sure. I mean, actually, EBITDA should follow actually bottom line and the output accordingly. So actually, when output is at nameplate capacity, then also we should be very close to our EBITDA target, of course, assuming that the quality of the output is also in line. And that is maybe the only thing that is causing or can cause a delay with regards to, let's say, the financial ramp-up and the production ramp-up. So, however, as I think was mentioned already before, it is relatively easy to ramp up a pulp site. Whilst for a fiber side, especially a lyocell side, it takes some time. However, we are very well on our way.
Got it. So just for the Brazil and Thailand sites, they will be ramped up in the next few months if everything goes fine?
Yes, that's what we said.
We expect
Amadeus to be at full speed by end of the year.
Got it. And could you just remind me what kind of EBITDA contribution on a run rate basis or on a fully ramped up basis you could expect from Brazil and from Thailand separately?
I think for Thailand, actually, we never ever mentioned our EBITDA for this site for good reasons. However, actually, what we also said that actually our projects that we implement must be in line with our ROCE target. And at the time we decided on Thailand, we said, okay, fine, the ROCE target is 10% plus. So actually, rest you can assume that actually the Thai project shall be good enough actually to come up with a ROCE of 10%. And with regards to Brazil, I think we have been more explicit. With regards to Brazil, we always said that actually in the long run, okay, we are expecting a so-called structural price of $900 per ton of dissolving wood pipe, so on average, okay? At the beginning of the project, we were assuming cash costs of slightly above $300. So that gives you then an EBITDA per ton of slightly below $600 and times 500,000 tons, that would equal $300 million. However, since the project has started, of course, what we saw is now with this inflationary environment we are in, that we are, due to the cost pressure, currently not at the $300. Anyway, now we are currently in the ramp-up phase, and therefore, simply because of economies of scale, we are not reaching that number by design. However, in the longer run, actually, we should come closer to those numbers.
And that, I mean, on that 300 with inflation, and I guess there's several aspects to that. Is 10% a fair number, or it's significantly higher? And assuming it ramps up in the next few months, where is that cost?
Look, I mean, the first thing is, of course, the inflation in Brazil. Of course, this is now a bit difficult to predict on how this will evolve over the next couple of quarters, be it now on salaries and wages, land lease costs, fertilizer, and that kind of stuff. That, of course, is very difficult to predict. And the major portion, actually, of the cost is also transportation, actually, from Brazil to Asia. I mean, those costs have come down now to more reasonable level. However, they are still above the level we saw basically when we kicked off the project 2 years ago.
Got it. Can you give a number? What kind of range? Are we talking like 400 now, assuming it ramps up and you get the economies of scale, or is it higher than 400?
That is something I would shy at this moment, because actually simply the environment is very volatile and visibility is fairly low.
Got it. Okay. And just my second question is in regards to your 2023 and 2024 maturities, the $269 million and the $538 million. Could you just remind us what those two instruments are, or the combination of, and what's the plan? How do you deal with them?
As I said during the presentation, I mean, we have relatively minor maturities in 2023, right? That's around $270 million. Then we have a bigger amount that comes due in 24 and 26. In 24 and 26, that is actually the result of a private placement, a so-called Schuldschein, that was placed back in 2019. And the majority there is actually with a term of 5 years, and that of course matures then in Q4 2024. Then of course there's a major portion that has a maturity of 7 years, and that matures then in Q4 2026.
But do you think the Schuldschein market is open to you guys today? If you wanted to come and preemptively refinance some of this debt?
At this point in time, we do not have any plans to go to the Schuldschein market.
Okay. And I mean, I guess, how would you envisage in your business plan to pay down the 23 and the 24 maturities?
For the 23 maturities, actually, we do have quite some liquidity still available, right? With regard to the maturities that come in the later years, actually, as said before, we also have a couple of projects that are finalized and go live, and shall then contribute to earnings as well, right?
Okay, that makes sense. Sorry, last one, your 2027 EBITDA target. Could you just remind us what needs to be done to reach that in regards to new, you know, major CapEx projects? Or can you reach that 1 billion EBITDA based on all the plans that you have at the moment?
Thank you for the question. No, we would continue to grow in the lyocell technology, as well as we would invest and strengthen our footprint in the recycling part. And with these parts, we believe we're going to have a strong product portfolio supported by investment into our marketing, and that will deliver the above 1 billion EBITDA in 2027.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Pleasure.
The next question is from the line of Sean Angara from Chronax Research. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity to ask a few questions. Sorry if this wasn't clear on the call earlier, but just going back to gearing and covenants, is there a net debt to EBITDA covenant in place? And if so, what is that? That's my first question.
No, there is no such covenant in place at this point in time.
Okay, excellent. That's very useful. Thanks. And then just sort of linked onto capital allocation or cash flow going into 2023, this might be a bit of an unfair question, but sort of what you've inferred in terms of working capital, CapEx, and sort of current operating environment, do you envisage that Lenzing will be free cash flow positive in 2023 at this stage?
I'm not 100% sure if I got your question because the line was very poor. The quality of the line was very poor.
Apologies.
Can I repeat that for you? Yes, please. Yeah.
Excellent. So I was just saying, in terms of what you've inferred based on sort of CapEx requirements for next year, working capital being released in Q4, as well as the current operating environment, as well as the sort of project ramp up of the lyocell in Thailand and the DWP project. My main question linked to all of this is, do you envisage that Lenzing will be free cash flow positive in 2023?
I mean, the answer to the question will depend on many factors, right? I mean, one being, of course, the development of the operating result. The other one, of course, being the level of CapEx we will be facing in 2023. So especially, as Stefan pointed out before, there actually no decisions have been made on whatever expansion projects might be in the pipeline or not. It's at this point in time still too early to answer the question.
Okay, no, that's fair on response. Thank you. And then just a follow-up in terms of your commentary around textile demand being weak and visibility low, Will this have any impact on the ramp-up of the DP project in Brazil, as well as from an offtake perspective, how do you sort of see demand coming off of those volumes? Thanks.
Yeah, well, put it that way, the again, it depends on a couple of factors. I would say the technical ramp-up, we are running pretty well and we are starting up. Depending on the length of the demand drop, and that could also have an impact to the pulp market. But at the moment, we, as I said, our commercial ramp-up is going by plan. Despite the issues in the we have seen already on the fiber market. And the second question, that was on the pulp plant. What was your second question?
It was just linked to the impact of the ramp up as well as how you see the demand, I guess, for DP in 2023, not just from a lensing desktop perspective, but from a global perspective.
We believe it's going to be good, well, because we are serving on one hand side, it's of course in mainly for our internal demand, but as the quality of our pulp is very special, we see also some other demand outside, so third party demand, and therefore we expect a healthy demand for 2023.
Excellent. Thanks for the time, guys.
Pleasure.
We have a follow-up question from Isha Sharma from Stifel. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for taking my last two quick questions. One is on the financial result. Is it fair to assume roughly 50% floating and 50% fixed rates for the financial debt that you have on your balance sheet? And secondly, on the others line where the EBITDA is mainly just cost, you have mentioned that you will reallocate them next year properly, but could you give us an indication as to the split between fiber and pulp in the first 9 months? And the third is just a request. It would be great to have quarterly update on the pulp segment. We anyway have to calculate it in the mornings, so it would be great if you gave us more details. Thanks.
Thank you for your question. So on what is fixed and what is variable, actually, I mean, you mentioned 50% fixed, 50 variable. However, it is roughly two-thirds fixed and one-third is variable. So, I mean, and anyway, you follow the company very closely. For example, the Schuldschein we issued in 2019, almost all of it is actually fixed. And whatever was not fixed, it was swapped to fixed. And therefore, actually, the ratio we have is two-thirds is fixed, roughly, and one-third variable. Then on the others area in the segment reporting, we are currently reworking, actually, the presentation of our segment report. I think it is a fair assumption that, I mean, first of all, more costs will be allocated to the divisions, and it is a fair assumption to say that the majority of costs that will be allocated will rather be allocated to the fiber division.
And
your last question was on providing this information. I mean, as I mentioned before already, I mean, at this point in time, we are disclosing the segment information only for the half year and the full year numbers. That is something I will discuss actually with the board of management on how to proceed, because I fully understand your information need in that regard, and I think the segment report is very helpful for you, but for the board of course as well. I will discuss this with the board of management and take it from there.
And
thank
come
you
back
so
to
much. Thank you.
The last question is from the line of Saul Casadio from MNG. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. It's just really a repeat of a question that's been asked before, but I didn't get the answer. It's about your FY22 guidance in line with market expectation. I assume it's for EBITDA, but not all the Bloomberg numbers are visible. The only two that I see are very different, one from each other. One is in the 330 and the other one is in the 400. So I just want to, sorry for missing your answer. Just want to re-ask the question, give it the importance.
Yeah. Thank you for asking that question again. As we mentioned, there are a couple of analysts who have updated their reports, and those reports we made available on our homepage. And if not, you can also contact our investor relation department with Sebastian Knus, who can help you and guide you.
I appreciate that, but wouldn't it be easier just to give us a number, just so that we are all on the same page? I don't understand why you're refraining from that.
I guess it's very fair. It's on the on the website, and you should see the number, right?
Sorry, I just haven't had a chance to look at the website. Normally, companies provide a guidance with the number or an interval.
Yeah, we look roundabout, right? The number you see there is roundabout for EBITDA 308.
308. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
308. Yeah.
300. Okay. Thank you very much for providing the number. I appreciate it.
Yep.
So there are no further questions at this time, and I hand back to Stefan Sieler for closing comments.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think a lot has been said, a lot has been asked, and hopefully we could give the right answers to your question and could be of help. Certainly a difficult quarter. Nevertheless, I see Lansing extremely well prepared for the future, and as we said, we are ready to grow. We set the right strategic steps, and that what is in our control, we executed well. And with that, I would close the call and wish you a very nice evening. Thank you so much.